Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
Alrighty, and we're back. And I know we've been off for a little while, but you know, us two, we're busy people and we get around and doing stuff. You know, I've been off gallivanting and tripping everywhere, so I've had some fun doing that. It's been a lot happening since we've been away, Steve. We're going to touch on a couple of topics, I think, that we probably left before we had a little bit of our break here, so it'll be interesting to revisit. But it's good to be back, obviously, and getting into the world of SciTech culture.
Very good. Welcome back, Ben. It is great to have you back. And certainly I had it noted to me personally that, you know, they wanted to know what happened with the American election.
Absolutely. So let's start there, shall we? I think it's actually a good thing that we didn't like have an episode straight after the result, because I don't know about you, but I've, you know, had a chance to not only internalized with the actual result, but also just follow how the response has been to it. And the thing that's fascinating to me about it is that all the different types of reactions, whether they're wise or not, or whatever, and it just kind of made me laugh in a way, because it was like just a clear result. So, like, unlike 2016, where it may have felt like a electoral college technicality that Trump won, this was like fair and square. Nah, he got voted in, no question. There's no argument, All right, you guys, you've understood what you've done here. We're about to test that, and we'll see what comes out of it. But the amount of, you know, for me personally, I can't imagine it is going to be a good thing going forward. But I don't have that same level of oh my God, where's this going? Because we kind of had one run of it already, and of course he'll probably be a bit more unrestrained this time based on the people he's surrounding himself with this time. But the thing that all the reaction online to it is like, well, what were you expecting at this point, you know, with everything that's going on? It's like, you know, you had your shot there, you know, like, and he won. So, you know, you're going to have to get on with it now.
Yeah, well, it's certainly kind of all new, but the same. It's no question this time round, Donald Trump knows what he's doing in terms of the processes. I don't know if he actually knew what being a president would mean in 2016, but he knows this time around, and he's working hard ahead of day one to make sure that he can start doing all the things that he's promised within those first 24 hours. So that'll be something else to entertain us in the new year for sure. Now, look, I agree with you. They're free and fair elections this time around. So there was, we won't see Joe refusing to leave the White House. In fact, he seemed pretty cheery the week after and even up until now. So he'll be off hopefully for a long and sentient retirement. But that aside, I mean, and we were speaking about this before, in my mind, the election pretty much went the way that I imagined, which was Trump was going to get essentially the same number of votes as he did in 2020. The question was how many votes would go the Democrats' way? About 10 million less than they probably needed and or would have expected. So, I mean, you know, the other way to interpret this as well is, did Trump actually get an extra 10 million votes of complicit silence? And does that mean actually that he got in by truly a whopping margin?
Mm, and there's been a lot of debate about that, subsequently to that, in terms of whether or not it was a big victory or whether it was just he won the swing states. And if I, you know, the same old argument from, you know, 2016, you know, just when you say a handful, obviously there's thousands we're talking about, but still a very small number of votes that went a different direction, and it was enough to swing the whole thing back in his camp. And, well, you know, like... Yeah, I think I said before, you know, I remember you saying that that it went the way you thought, and I was, you know, obviously going with a slightly different version, and I can just see I was starting to sense trouble in the lead up because of some of the messaging and the way she was coming across at the end. But at the end of the day, you know, that's what they've done, and they're going to have to get through it, and it's going to be another interesting 4 years, you know. The other thing that I think that people have freaked out about is, you know, they went straight down the fascist route and everyone's going to be organized and all of that. I don't, you know, I think just watch it. I don't know if any of these guys are as organized as what you think they are.
I would agree with you on that. I think what's really interesting with respect to that is some of the relationships, you know, so whatever you think of Elon Musk, and I think this will be his role will come under immense scrutiny over the next 4 years. You know, his relationship with the Donald, purely business. And when I think of what RFK Jr. is going to do for health, all I think about is people getting fired on The Apprentice. You know, like, so...
maybe that'll be it. A nice big boardroom is set up in the White House with cameras.
Look, I think we're going to see the equivalent of that this term. I think it's going to be run a lot more in a lot more familiar, dare I say it, format.
To The Apprentice
style.
Oh well, at least that'll provide some amusement, even though it's dark, I guess.
It will be dark, but it's going to be funny.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of, interesting events, I kind of, you know, had my jaw on the floor one morning this week when I saw South Korea had gone into martial law, or the president had declared it. Obviously, it was all over about 6 hours later, overturned by the parliament, and then he withdrew it. But I think it was just the fact that it actually happened at all, and this idea that he was emboldened enough to, like, you know, go with this almost nuclear trigger of an option to try and, you know, get his way, basically. And I think, I just wonder if it highlights, I don't know if you can draw... draw much from it, that whole populist shtick of you know, being outlandish and going out there and doing this wacky stuff, and whether or not that's just like a one-off, or whether it gives other people ideas in other countries or anything, because, you know, he did it, so...
well, that's right, and I have to confess, I don't know enough about Korean politics to actually understand why he did it. I mean, I understand why he might want to have done it. I mean, if you have the rest of the parliament blocking you in terms of what you want to do, you know, I guess it's one course of action you can take, but I'd suspect you'd have to be pretty blind to the consequences if you can't make it stick. He must have been either very confident or very foolish, and the fact that it didn't come off, and particularly in South Korea, which is known, or has been known, as, you know, really a country that in the last 50 years has really revolutionized itself, and obviously with their northern neighbors, you know, gone in quite the opposite direction. So to see that was a bit disconcerting, especially with a lot of the other political unrest that we're seeing around the globe.
Absolutely. And that's why I just, obviously we've lumped these two stories together, but it's kind of an interesting thing. It's like, I guess the thing to watch out for in the coming years is trends, and seeing what happens. And you know, we're in a truly global world now, where we're all you know, interconnected, and you know, it's not as if you know, something happens somewhere, it doesn't have an impact somewhere else now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens from that.
Yeah, very true. And I think you've hit on it, like the interconnectedness of so many, fortunes for countries around the globe means that it's very easy to be drawn into other people's disputes and crises.
Absolutely. All right, let's make a hard left, hard right, away from those topics. And I can clearly recall us, pontificating about the boredom we felt about the iPhone releases from Apple back in September, having a bit of not a whinge, but what have they done for us lately, kind of thing in the interesting department. But we did have a caveat there that the Macs were the best place that they ever were. And the week before I went on my trip, I saw that they announced all the M4 Mac lineup, and it's really, really impressive by comparison to what they announced in the iPhone lineup. In particular, I wanted to highlight the Mac Mini in there. That's got to be, without a doubt, probably one of the best value computers, desktop computers in particular, but just computers in general that you're likely to find. Unless you start upgrading them, of course, Apple starts charging you lots of money for just to add, an extra 250 gigs of storage or whatever. But if you go with the base model, it's really exceptional value. And it's everything that you would want, I guess, from a mini computer like that. And of course, enabled by Apple Silicon, they were able to make it that small. And it just it makes it super encouraging for their Mac lineup going forward. I just find it ironic. There was probably a period there, 10 years ago, where it was thought that Mac was a legacy platform and it would probably, go the way of the dinosaur or whatever. But it seems like that area of Apple is probably, even though it might not be generating the revenue that iPhone does, so investors are more happy with the iPhone's performance probably, but as a consumer, I'm much more excited by what the Mac is doing these days.
Oh, likewise. I think you and I have been big fans of the Mac Mini now for many years, just the place it holds and the fact that it's small, but it's completely functional. And, if it's the only way you can get into the Mac lineup because of, the general cost of the lineup, then, you can pair it with any monitor you like and away you go. And I think for me, or even several monitors, if necessary, and away you go. So it's great. It's powerful. It's got the Silicon range of chips in there now, the M4. So, I mean, what's not to love? The only thing that kind of, puzzled me and even concerned me somewhat was the whole fact they talked about compromise. I really hope Steve Jobs is not listening, because he'd just go ballistic. I'll sack them all.
Yeah, well, putting the power button underneath in the back or something was the biggest controversy or something.
Oh, why did they preempt this, that there were compromises? No one would have known.
That's right. You don't say anything. Absolutely.
Why would you say we could have made it smaller? Because you didn't. So obviously you couldn't.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. The one thing that really blew my mind, and this isn't specific to the Mac Mini, is it's actually the M4 chip itself, is that, I'm obviously looking for, I can probably in most scenarios get away with one of the standard M chips, but I have typically, I'm using an M1 Pro MacBook here for doing the podcast. I tend to like just that next extra level up, just for those cases where I know I'm going to hit, some requirement that needs that performance, and it's just nice to have there. The thing that kind of blew my mind away is that it seems like the M4, just the base M4, is there. And that's the thing that really is amazing. Like, there's even an argument now that you don't even need to go beyond. I mean, probably back in the M1, you didn't need to go beyond, to an M1 Pro or whatever. But it's now even more the case that a Pro or a Max chip seems to be a limited use case.
Well, I don't know. I mean, for all those extreme deep fake videos that you're going to be making in future, you're going to need a pro chip. You're always going to need a pro chip. Ben, I noticed the same thing with that basic M4. And it even got me thinking, everyone foams at the mouth over NVIDIA and their chips. But really, I've not seen anything that's really a patch on the Apple Silicon design. And I know, you just can't purchase these chips the same way that Amazon is to build, bespoke, AI centers. But, you'd think that this is a logical next step somewhere for Apple. I guess they're probably already doing it with Apple AI. They're just not publicizing it. But it's amazing. I think the power in what we're seeing in these current generation chips, they are phenomenal. But of course, as I say, for all those deep fakes we're going to be pumping out, you're going to need every single cycle that you can wring out of your processor.
That's right. I need to get the pro chip so I can use Apple Intelligence. I keep forgetting that. Alrighty. All right. We might wrap it up there, Steve. That on a good note there. I think I just have to justify a reason to get a Mac Mini now. I don't really have one, but I'll have to find one.
Well, you will need it just to test Apple Intelligence, and I'm sure you will.
Absolutely. All right, so that's it for this week's episode. We'll catch you next time.